And I am told that Osprey is on the call. Would you go ahead and introduce her, please?
Yes, of course. Osprey.
Yes, I hope that you can hear me. Can you hear me?
Yes. Yes. Okay, great. And now, after much anticipation, with much pleasure, we bring you our featured speaker, Osprey Oriel Lake. Osprey is the founder and executive director of the Women's Earth and Climate Action Network International, also known as WECAN, working nationally and internationally with grassroots and frontline women leaders, policymakers, and diverse coalitions to build women's leadership, climate justice, resilient communities, and a just transition to a decentralized, democratized, clean energy future. Yeah. Osprey is the visionary behind the International Women's Earth and Climate Summit, which brought together 100 global women leaders to draft and implement a women's climate action agenda. I was lucky enough to attend that summit in San Francisco in September of 2018, and it was incredibly inspiring. Osprey serves on the executive committee for the Global Alliance for the Rights of Nature and has been a core organizer of various international rights of nature tribunals. Osprey's writing has been featured in publications including The Guardian, Common Dreams, Earth Island Journal, The Ecologist, Open Democracy, and EcoWatch. And she is the author of the award-winning book, Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. Her resume goes on and on, but let's leave time for her to speak. Before we do, everyone, please note your questions for Osprey during her presentation. We'll have a Q&A segment immediately following. Welcome, Osprey. The COVID-19 global pandemic is both a message from Mother Earth reminding us that we are not separate from nature. Your recent WECAN webinar touched on possibilities in the midst of loss, fighting for just care, and grieving. Can you help guide us through to the empowering parts? So your mic is open.
Okay, great. Hi, everyone. It's a pleasure and honor to be on this call with you. And I apologize that I didn't hear the first part of the call because we were busy trying to work on our technology, but I'm glad that you can hear me. Thank you to Michael, who really, we tried really hard. Thank you for all the dedication work of your membership and all the work that you're doing. I think the most important thing to say is how critical it is at this time that we really connect our different movements, our different communities. If there is ever a time when we need to connect with one another, both regionally, nationally, and globally, it's right now. I think, you know, it's a very, very challenging time, to say the least. I've been on a lot of calls, and as was mentioned, we've been hosting a series of webinars, which all of you are very welcome to participate in. They're open to the public. And what we're really doing is understanding that we need a very comprehensive approach to both the double crises right now of COVID-19 and the climate crisis. I mean, our organization has already been deeply involved with the climate crisis for, you know, over a decade. And we really see a connection between the two of these two crises, as I'm sure many of you do as well. And I think the other thing that we see is that the COVID-19 crisis is amplifying and exacerbating injustices that have already been in place for a very, very long time due to our institutionalized systems of patriarchy, colonization, racism, imperialism, and capitalism, all those big ism words. But the fact is these systems of oppression and how they impact us in different ways and affect different communities is something that we are all experiencing. And now as crises unfold, we see really how those hardships and those injustices become, you know, ever more clear. So we're really connecting with a lot of the communities that we have already been working with around the world, you know, from the Democratic Republic of Congo to the communities we work with in the Amazon rainforest to Indigenous and frontline women across the Americas, you know, on these issues of climate and bringing those networks together to also now face and work with each other to support each other during the pandemic that we're facing now. And I think that's one of the key things is creating community and connection, and then diving into both a short-term and long-term analysis, and short-term action and long-term action. And so those are the two areas I think that, you know, I'll take my few minutes with you all to talk about and then dive into some questions that you might have. I saw, and maybe you saw on the internet, you know, on some of these memes going around on social media, there was a piece of graffiti that came out of China. It was in a subway station there. And it said something to the effect in the translation of, we cannot go back to where we were because where we were is precisely the problem. And I think that's a really profound statement in a nutshell. It's just really talking about how, you know, neoliberal capitalism and really the power of the 1%, if you will, has led, you know, us off a cliff for a very long time. And we cannot continue to live in an economic framework in which, you know, we are having endless economic material growth on a finite planet. So not everything is about economics, but I think we really need to address, you know, the incredible stress our current economic system has on nature and on racism and colonization and all these other issues that we're fighting at this time, including the climate crisis. So one of the, or, you know, some of the short-term things we're doing right now is connecting communities so we can share stories and start following data points and, you know, seeing where we can help. I mean, everything from the basic thing of getting nurses equipment that they need. I mean, it's completely outrageous, as you all know, here in the United States, that we have all these people on the front lines, from grocery workers to people delivering food, to nurses and doctors, without the proper protective equipment that they need to be facing people who have, you know, this illness and are on the front lines risking their lives to keep this country going and to help protect people who are ill. So, you know, I think there's kind of like a first responder activity in helping people in need and ensuring that people are safe and sheltered and have food. So there's sort of that aspect of it. And for us, you know, we work a lot with Indigenous communities and Indigenous women leaders. So we're very much engaged in fundraising for those communities right now, because Indigenous people, due to colonization, already have issues around not having medical care in their communities, facing food insecurity. And that's only deepening as a result of the current emergency. So there's just a lot of need that is just, you know, very, very profound at this time. We're also working a lot with our communities on developing more food sovereignty and food security and how to set up those systems right now, because in the long run, that's what will help people get more stable. So I think that's kind of more on the hopeful end, is, you know, how do we use this moment to gain power back in our communities, get localized? How do we create more localized energy grids on solar and wind? How do we create more local farming practices? How do we create more community gardens? All these things that all along we've known we've needed to do. Now that we have this pause, this forced pause by nature, you know, it's time for people to get to know their neighbors and get to know where they can grow their own food and where is their water coming from and how they can localize their energy sources. So we have a lot of resources on our website about that, and are running these webinars all year long around some of these practical pieces. But also, you know, now moving more to the long-term analysis, we cannot in any way shift our attention from the deep political analysis and the structural changes that must occur at this time, and that deeper vision of the world that many of us have been working on, I'm sure many of you, for a very long time, you know, and how we change these current structures. And I think one of the really interesting campaigns that we're really lifting up, and maybe you've heard about it as well, is, you know, that there needs to be a just recovery. There's all these stimulus packages going through Washington, D.C. right now. And, of course, we see, like we did in 2008, you know, we've seen this movie before around, you know, who's actually getting bailed out. So we're involved in a lot of work right now in terms of advocacy work, to ensure that there's a people's bailout, and it consists of five key points. I'll just share them briefly, which is, number one, health is a top priority for all people with no exceptions. Two, provide economic relief directly to the people, i.e., you know, we don't want to see the banks and the transport industry and the fossil fuel industry being bailed out. We want to see, you know, economic relief directly to the people. Thirdly, rescue workers and communities, not corporate executives. Four, create resilience for future crises, because obviously, you know, these crises are going to continue to unfold, you know, even when we quote-unquote resolve this current pandemic. The climate crisis is rapidly unfolding and hasn't stopped. And then there's going to be huge economic crises that we also will see emerge and are already emerging. And then fifthly, build solidarity and community across borders. Do not empower authoritarians. So, you know, we also know that this is a time of terrific power struggles here in the United States, but, you know, also in the all the different communities we work with in the Amazon, in the Bolsonaro government, in Brazil, a huge power struggle there. We could go on and on. So, you know, we need to have an analysis, a political analysis here in the United States that also is an international analysis, because what we do here affects, as you know, countries around the world. And we need to continue to work globally as well as nationally. And to look at, you know, what are we offering in terms of new economics? What are we offering in terms of different types of economies? And again, this goes back to, you know, how do we localize our food shed? How do we localize our economies? How do we look at cooperatives? Some of you might be aware of the Mondragon cooperatives in Spain that have been very successful for, you know, over 50 years. They've been, I think, some of the most successful examples of cooperative movements where entire communities are part of a cooperative, where there's a very different system of economy than capitalism. And so I think it's a very key time to realize now that, you know, this coronavirus has brought, you know, our economy and our quote-unquote normal way of life to its knees. How do we take this time to say we're on pause? Many people are in survival mode. Some of us are more privileged than others and have a roof over our head and food. And so how do we organize and cross-pollinate our movement to absolutely demand and insist upon the fact that as we move out of this phase and, you know, we will move from here to there, that there is a vision that we have been working on for a long time that is just, that has a different economic structure, that has different power politics, that has an understanding of climate justice, that understands we need to uplift community solutions, that we need to have brown and black and indigenous peoples and frontline peoples held up first and foremost, that these uneven discrepancies are not part of the new system. So we're going to have to not only envision more clearly where we want to go from here to there, but we're going to also have to fight for it. And we're going to have to get together because, as has been stated by many leaders in the past, you know, power is not going to just feed itself. We're going to have to fight for it. And so fundamentally, we have to transform our system to care for people and planet. And in many ways, this has been what the climate justice movement and environmental justice movement has been doing for years, or peace movements have been doing for years. But now we must be able to deliver, if you will, and, you know, link a lot of these different proposals that are being put out there, like the Green New Deal. That's not just in the U.S. There's versions of it that are circulating globally. You know, in our organization, we are particularly lifting up women's leadership because, you know, and I won't go into here in great detail, but on our website, we have, you know, lots and lots of data that has been collected over, you know, the last decade around the role of women's leadership right now and how it's central to solutions. And the nexus of really the role of women and their need to be uplifted and their solutions front and center to really move through these crises. There's a lot of stats on the fact that that leadership is there, but it is not acknowledged or being funded or acknowledged. And as a result, a lot of the situations we're in are continuing to unfold at a rapid rate. So I would also just put a plug in for the fact that, you know, uplifting women's leadership is actually statistically one of the things that we can do first and foremost to move towards our goals of peace, to move towards our goals of climate justice, to move towards sustainable systems. Women's leadership could not be more important than now. And again, I'm not going into the stats, but they're all on our website. So it's not just sort of like a nice thing to say, but in actuality, something that we need to do and practice. I could say so much more, but I feel like I've talked a long time, and I think I'll just leave it at that and be glad to open up for, you know, conversation with all of you. And again, thanks so much for having me and for all the work that you're doing.
Thank you so much, Osprey, for that and for your organization's amazing work on behalf of the planet and future generations and elevating the voices of many women leaders, whether acknowledged or not. We promised that folks could ask you questions, so now is the chance of everybody. If you want to ask Osprey a question, press number 2 on your phone keypad to get on a stack. Please keep the questions short, and we can get to more of them. While people form the stack, I'll start off by asking you, Osprey, in this crisis, how do you take care of yourself and your immediate community? It's something that we activists need to do. And right now, we're under so much stress, and we also can't be out there. So I'm interested in how you're taking care of yourself and your immediate community.
Well, thank you for asking, and that's a really great question. I mean, about 4.5 weeks ago, I actually got quite ill, and I'm just coming out of it. I don't believe I had COVID. I had a very, very bad case of bronchitis, and so it wasn't, and I, you know, I was all calling into my doctor, not going to her office, but calling her, and, you know, we kind of assessed that it really wasn't COVID-19, but, you know, we'll never know 100%. So, you know, I was actually quite ill and working from home, and so that was, you know, kind of scary to be super vulnerable. I'm still kind of coming out of it, and, you know, to be vulnerable to, you know, this disease and illness at a time when I was already sick. So, you know, the first thing that I did, and I think a lot of, and we've encouraged a lot of our membership to do, and all of my colleagues, is, you know, just find out the people either that you're living with or are your immediate, you know, community of 2 or 3 people, you know, not large, that are, you know, going to kind of go through this together on a really intimate basis, whether you're living with them or you're caring for each other. So I have 2 very close friends that live near me, and we figured out a system about how to care for each other, and, you know, work out how we're getting our food. And, you know, just check in on each other once a day. I think it's very, very important if you do live alone, which I do, to ensure that you check in with someone at least once a day. I think it's really important to not be alone, you know, other than, of course, I'm on a gazillion calls like everybody else. But I mean more personally, you know, making sure your health in this good way, that you have the supplies that you need. You know, we created our own little Facebook page with people who live right near me, so we can share knowledge around, you know, supplies and the condition of health on our, in our immediate neighborhood on folks. So I think there's that, you know, pulling in close to home and making sure you have support for yourself and making sure that you know what's happening in your neighborhood, in your region. And as I mentioned, you know, we've also been making sure that the healthcare workers and the grocery people in our area have the supplies they need, the protective gear that they need to be on the front lines. So I think those are some of like the key things about like self-care, and then, you know, making sure I've made sure that I exercise every day, and, you know, just have good health practices of, you know, now that, you know, we're not going out, you know, not just sitting, so to speak, but making sure that we're exercising in a good way, walking if you can and have the opportunity to do that. I already had a little garden in my backyard, and, you know, when I'm not, you know, on calls or helping people, I'm digging up more of the backyard and just growing more food. I think if you have the chance to do that, it's great. And I think on the last piece I'll say on that is, on one of our webinars, Caring for Our Communities, You know, some folks live in an apartment. They're like, well, I can't dig up my backyard. So there was a wonderful Indigenous woman, Linda Black Elk, who outlined, you know, a way to even grow food in a cardboard box and get some soil and grow it from your apartment. Just that feeling of being connected to Mother Earth, get some fresh greens, and, you know, practice some self-care with some gardening in that way.
Wonderful.
This week we saw, many of us were very disappointed that Bernie Sanders pulled out of the presidential race. Is your organization trying to engage Vice President Biden in any way to kind of convince him about the kind of reset that we're needing after this mess is over with?
Well, first of all, we're a 501c3, so we have, you know, certain kinds of limitations. We work in coalition with folks on the Green New Deal, and we're part of a coalition called the Feminist Green New Deal. And we're definitely going to be putting forward our principles forward to his campaign. You know, so we're uplifting all the things that we were talking about earlier in our values. So we're definitely going to be doing that. I did see circulating, which I thought was really positive, a lot of the youth who were really behind the Sanders campaign immediately sent out a letter to Vice President Biden, you know, basically telling him, we're not going to vote for you if you don't do the following things. And, you know, it was a whole list of things around, you know, not taking money from fossil fuel company executives and all the kinds of things you can imagine that, you know, were part of the Sanders campaign around medical care for all, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see how he responds to that letter, because they're basically saying, you know, you're not going to have the youth vote if you don't shift on some of your policies. So I think a lot of these things, yeah, it was really good. And I think a lot of these things will start getting sorted out. But we definitely will be applying pressure through our Green New Deal principles. And I think that's what's going to happen. And hopefully there's going to be some positive conversations between the Sanders campaign and the Biden campaign, because, you know, they're well aware of this problem. But all that said, I think it's very, very scary that we could have a repeat of the last election cycle. And we just cannot allow that to happen. And I think we have to do everything in our power to, you know, to move Biden into a more progressive direction so that we can get the voters out there.
You were talking about lifting up women's leadership during this time, Osprey. Is there any movement to do this sort of women's leadership conferences on a state-by-state basis where we could, you know, perhaps hear from some Indigenous women leaders, but also women leaders in our states where we call for the kinds of change and reset that that all of us know is necessary?
Yeah, I mean, I think that Rachel's network is a really good place to look, you know, to see which women leaders are, you know, running for office and that sort of thing. And also, as I mentioned, next week we're actually doing a webinar with Indigenous women leaders from the Global North. And I think that would be an opportunity to directly hear from the women leaders themselves. And, you know, we will be engaging them on, you know, this issue as well. So I think that would be, you know, just an immediate opportunity to plug into what's happening at that level and what they have to say. So that would be just, you know, a few suggestions. The other thing I just wanted to mention, I realized I didn't connect the dots in something well with folks that I think is really important. Speaking of Indigenous women's leadership, I've been talking to a lot of the Indigenous women from the Amazon rainforest in Ecuador and Brazil where we work, and I think one of the things that is really important to sort of digest and metabolize in our minds right now is that even though scientists have not precisely, but they're getting close, identified the origin of COVID-19, we definitely do know it is from animals, wild animals, most likely a bat, but, you know, there's still some data being researched on that, but in any case, it comes from, you know, the crossover of animals and humans interacting and interacting in a way in which it's not healthy, obviously, where wild animals that and wild habitat that humans should not be interfering with, which we have, is causing this crossover, just like Ebola. And I think we really need to understand that part of what's happening in this moment that connects to the climate crisis is that the way we have been treating nature, the way we have been treating the earth, is devastating and is causing, you know, all these different crises ecologically and now to our public health. And so I think it's really also time to pause and think about, you know, wildlife habitat and how we are encroaching on the wild. And we've really, you know, crossed the boundaries with Mother Nature, if you will, even more. We've already done that through our economic systems and our extractive and exploitive economic systems. But now, even, you know, as we've encroached on wildlife habitat and crossed over into the animal world where we should not be, this is where this kind of pandemic has arisen and will continue to do so if we do not change how we're living with the earth and respecting the natural system. And so I think that's a whole body of political and cultural and economic analysis that we need to bring into the picture. And I will just close that comment by saying, you know, we're also very involved in the Rights of Nature movement, which is a, if you haven't heard of it, it's sort of an understanding that nature should not be treated as property or as commodity, but that we really need to see nature having its own rights, like humans have rights, and that we need to start living within the natural laws of Mother Earth, that we need to start living within the natural capacity of the earth. And I think that's also part of this dialogue that is important to bring into our political analysis.
Thank you. We have now five people on stack. So Joan Goddard, you're first.
Let's see. I hit two things. One of them is pretty basic, whatever. The other is the thing about pressuring Biden. I know that there is a tendency for us all to think, oh, Trump is so horrible, so of course everybody's going to vote for Biden. But I hope that that as you're interacting and leading, helping to lead the Bernie supporters, that there will not be a situation like there was last time. Even, you know, that we won't count on Trump to get us all to vote. The other thing I wanted to, and you obviously like to hear your response to that, the other thing is the mundane thing, which is maybe you said your website or your organization clearly enough that we can find the website, but it sounds like a wonderful one, and I hope you'll repeat the URL or how we find it or whatever. Thank you so much for your talk and for your work. Mercy. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that good question and comments. And in terms of our organization, it's www, and then WECAN, and then the word international spelt out fully, international.org. So it's www.wecaninternational.org. And WECAN is Women's Earth and Climate Action Network. So our acronym is WECAN, because yes, we can do these things. So thank you for inviting me to share that. And yeah, I completely hear you. And I tell you, that's what I was saying earlier, you know, it's really kind of a nerve-wracking moment because we don't want a repeat of, you know, the 2016 election. And I wish I could say beyond a shadow of a doubt we're not doing that, but I can't. I wish people would, you know, I don't know. First of all, what I have seen with a lot of colleagues is there's a mourning period. People are in mourning about the Sanders campaign closing down. Okay, so I think we need to give people breathing room because it's extraordinarily disappointing. And so, you know, we all are just kind of having to catch our breath before the next thing happens. And then I think, you know, so that it's sort of, you know, not just, well, we have to vote for Biden because we don't want Trump because that didn't work last time. And I agree with you. And we certainly should not assume that whatsoever. There's going to have to be some courting going on here. There's going to have to be some serious courting. There's going to have to be serious negotiations going on. And I think that's what's going to make the difference. And I certainly know that's where we're going to put our energy is like, how do we get people to, you know, bring some of these gaps closer together, where we can see some tangible policies that people can get excited about who you know, we're really rooting for Bernie Sanders. And that has to be real, or we're going to be back to 2016. So, you know, I think we all need to put our energy there and pressure everybody to realize we all got to get on this, and it can't just be talk. We got to see some real give here. So I hope that addresses what you're getting at a little bit. Thanks.
Thank you. Like you, WILF is a 501c4 organization, not C3. So we can do a little more in the public sector, but not a whole lot either. But what you're really talking about here, and what I was really referring to as well, is the idea of bringing these allies together, bringing people together who have the same vision and share the same vision, and can begin now talking about how to put that into action during this period of reset. Nancy Price, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Ariel, for an inspiring presentation. I'm a member of the California Trade Justice Alliance, and I just got a notice today that under the cover of COVID-19, Trump is beginning to push forward to negotiate a trade agreement between the U.S. and Kenya. Now, we all know what these trade agreements are based on, and so I'm wondering if we need to push back against this as soon as it becomes more public. I just got a notice of it myself. I could forward that to you if you would like. I hadn't heard of it before, but I can see that under the cover of the current day-to-day a Trump show, press conference, and the, other sort of, not that COVID-19 is a distraction, but it certainly keeps our mind on one topic. But as you're saying, we need to push forward on this other agenda. Perhaps we need to inform ourselves also about this trade agreement. It will be a disaster for Africa and for Kenya. Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing up that point. I would say that probably a good half of my time is engaged in these kind of activities. You know, we're a really small organization, by the way, so everyone jumping in together is a really good thing because there's so much going on. I was not aware of the particular trade deal with Kenya. I'm aware of how terrible these trade deals are, and yes, I think one of the things that keeps me up at night is that while this pandemic is going on, the Trump administration they were already wreaking havoc. It has been horrific between, you know, the bailouts that are going to the fossil fuel industry, unraveling the EPA, allowing, you know, polluters to pollute more under the cover that this is needed somehow because of COVID-19. You know, trade deals, as you mentioned, with Kenya. There are other trade deals that are going on. It is frightening. He's also pushing through a lot of judges right now, which I really am concerned about because those are long-term positions that even if he gets voted out, you know, we're going to have all across the country judges that are, you know, not in our camp, so to speak. So, yes. They are practicing, as Naomi Klein says, you know, the shock doctrine to the nth degree. And this is a huge power grab that's going on. And, you know, I know I've got my hands full. We're very involved with divestment work. We've been involved with a lot of, we focus on really getting banks and insurance companies and asset managers to, and we also work on some pension funds to divest from fossil fuels so that we, you know, shut down the fossil fuel industry, which is also controlling a lot of the politicians. That's a lineup that is happening. And, you know, we're using this time to continue very strongly with something called Stop the Money Pipeline Campaign. You can look it up, Stop the Money Pipeline Campaign. It's a coalition of a lot of us working on divestment right now. And, so that's the angle we're working on because under the cover of COVID, a lot of these things around the fossil fuel industry are going on, and that's kind of our focus. But I would just suggest if people have opportunity in their own organization to go after some of these other issues that absolutely, we need to be doing more media around them. We need to be researching them. We need to be investigating them. We need to be exposing them. And it's very, very frustrating because, usually at a time like this, I know our organizations and many, maybe yours as well, we would be on the streets by now. We would be on the streets in Washington, D.C. over a lot of this, and we can't be. So we're having to, send letters to, Congress people, big group sign-on letters. Everything's having to be done online, and, of course, it's less effective, but, it's what we have as tools now. So, I think a big thing is, op-eds, continuing to collect together and organize with allies and do all you can to write to Congress people and let them know that you're aware of these activities and you don't agree with them. I think we have to do a tremendous amount of pushback online as much as we can, but it is one of the scariest parts of this moment is the power grab that's going on in every sector by this administration.
Thank you. We have a question from Dita in San Francisco. Go ahead.
I have a lot of problems with figuring out on my own behalf and Wilt's behalf and WeCan's behalf the utility of proceeding with any of the plans we can think of. And it's partly because I think that the elephant in the room is overpopulation, and there really isn't anything we can do about that. However, its pressures on nature and all of the variables we've been talking about is there. And meanwhile, the people have been separated from each other psychologically by having to stay at home, and if they venture out, put a mask on, you don't even know who the other person is, who you're passing. You can't even smile at them. And so meanwhile, the power of the government has exponentially increased because they're the focus of our attention. And I have trouble knowing what cudgel to pick up. That's it. I'm sorry to be so negative, but it's where I am. If I'm maybe in my room for 3 weeks, unable to feel a part of anything, and I don't think I'm alone with that.
Definitely not. Many of us are in the same boat. Did you have a response, Oscar?
Yeah, I just wanted to. What was your name? What was the woman who just spoke? What's your name?
Beatra.
Beatra? Well, I just wanted to say, Beatrice, you're not alone. It's a really, really hard time. And, I think it's really important, and I hope you have one or two people you can talk to, more on a regular basis, because it's really important to not be alone and isolated, because that can be very depressing and very, very hard. So the first thing is I just hope that you have some support from friends nearby. Even if you can't see them, that you can talk to them, because it's just too much for any of us to shoulder this moment alone. It's just simply too much. So I that would be my first thing is don't be alone, and make sure you have somebody or two people you can reach out to connect with. And then in terms of the bigger picture, we all can't do everything. We can only do what we can do, and every little bit helps. And so, it can be very, very, very overwhelming. Where to enter into the movement of things. And, for some people, it can just be, like I said, digging in the backyard and growing some food if you can do that. And, in terms of the bigger political situation, sometimes it's just a matter of picking one thing that you feel that you can do from your home, obviously in a protected way, successfully. And, one of my friends, all she is doing, this is what she can do, is it just so happens she's a yoga person who does teaches yoga. So, she's not into politics at all, but what she can do is every day she goes online, two different times a day, and she offers an hour yoga session for people, and it's free online, and people can watch her on Facebook you know, and go through that. And that's what she's doing. She's trying to just help people stay sane by exercising with them and working with them in that way. And I'm not saying that's what you should do, but I'm just saying that that's something that she has in her hands to do. And it's something very simple, but it's something she can do to contribute to the moment. So I would just, you know, kind of look in your own toolbox of who you are and what you have to offer and know that it's enough. And even if it's the smallest of things, and maybe it's even you just calling people, maybe they just need to hear from you and just keeping somebody else comforted. You know, all of it's important, our personal to our political. And I would just suggest not being alone, not isolating, and picking one thing that you can do that you feel connected to. I hope that's helpful. I know it's a really hard time, so I don't mean to take it lightly whatsoever.
Thanks, Spirit. That was a really good response and so meaningful for many of us. Sandy Thacker, you had your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Osprey. Thank you. Thank you so much for all. I mean, you're really an incredible woman. I think you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, the frustration of seeing the right using this pandemic to virtually eliminate, you know, environmental protections, not allowing extra time for comments on projects going through. But, you know, I mean, it's just, and you can't go out on the street, you know, and fight it. But it's where we're at. So I did wonder specifically, because I know you work with Indigenous folk, if you're doing anything, you know, the project on the border has going forward with construction. And I know there's been a lot of talk about, you know, there's going to be first hundreds and then thousands of workers, you know, in Indigenous communities who could spread the COVID virus. You know, throughout a lot of the Indigenous communities there. So I'm wondering your feelings about that and what if anything, you're doing and what we might be able to do to help stop that project.
Are we specifically talking about the border wall? I couldn't hear that part.
No, not the border wall, but the border pipeline, the pipeline up in
Montana. The pipeline.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
Got it. Sorry, I just couldn't hear.
All right.
Yeah. And again, you know, not to overstate this, but I would definitely recommend tuning into our webinar next week on the 14th, because we're going to be talking to four Indigenous women leaders, one on the Keystone XL pipeline, one woman who's going to talk about Line 3 coming down from the tar sands in Canada, one person who's going to be talking about the Coastal GasLink pipeline, the Wet'suwet'en people up in Canada, and then one woman who's an expert on the tar sands sector in general and the, you know, Keystone that ties into Keystone XL and the tar sands pipeline. So, you know, we're getting deep into this. One, we're going to be hearing from them, you know, what their campaigns are, what we can do in this moment. Obviously, Keystone XL came up again and is being crammed through, you know, in this moment, taking advantage again, shock doctrine methodology of shoving this through in this moment. So we're doing a couple of things. One, you know, we're doing awareness building by having this webinar next week to get people aware of it. And I'm sure we're going to hear more about what's happening on the ground. I think that, you know, again, for us, a lot of our divestment strategy is exactly about stopping these pipelines. So that's why we're going after specifically right now the banks, the mm-hmm. asset managers like BlackRock, Chase Bank, Wells Fargo, and then some of the insurance companies like Liberty Mutual. And also we're actually, I'm in the process right now of lining up some banks in Europe like Deutsche Bank, who are funding both the Coastal GasLink and the KXL pipelines. So there's a lot of research that we do with others in coalition around researching which banks are investing in like TC Energy that puts on KXL or Enbridge, which is, you know, who is behind Line 3 pipeline, and then going after those banks who are funding those companies. And so we're working like around the clock, writing letters to them, creating online meetings with their ESG team, their environment, sustainability and governance teams at the banks. And, you know, we're really going after with hard on them to say, stop funding these pipelines. And there are human rights and indigenous rights violations going on. One, in terms of indigenous rights violations concerning consent, the tribes along a lot of these pipelines, as you probably know, have not consented to allowing these pipelines through on their territories. So there's a consent issue. And then right now, obviously, we're pushing the point on it being a public health issue because, as you mentioned, you know, if there's all this construction is going to bring, you know, disease to these very vulnerable communities. And then the other point is the missing and murdered Indigenous women issue, which is that when these pipelines go through, they set up what are called man camps. Some of you might have heard about them.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, there's like these thousands of workers who are not part of the community come in. And not only in this case can they bring disease, but, you know, there's a whole history of them, you know, raping women and hurting Indigenous women along the pipeline route. So for all these reasons, we're telling the financial industry, do not fund, do not insure these pipelines, and especially now, don't do it. So that's like, you know, in terms of campaigns, that's a big part of our work is this these finance campaigns with the financial industry, and like we're on that every day, all day. That's what we do.
Great. Thank you. And when again is that webinar? And
it's April 14th, and it will be at 1 o'clock, April 14th at 1 o'clock Pacific time, 4 o'clock Eastern time. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're, and it will, you do have to sign up because of all the security stuff going on. It's on Zoom. But if you go to our website, and you'll see under a section called Our Work. It's a mm-hmm. menu, a scroll down menu, and you'll see where it says webinars under Our Work, and you just click on that, and it has all the information there. The other thing is if you're on Facebook, you can see our Facebook page, which is under Women's Earth and Climate Action Network, the whole thing spelled out, Women's Earth and Climate Action Network on Facebook. And then we're promoting it like crazy there, and there's a Facebook event page, and it has all the information about how to call in.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Laura Paisley out of Los Angeles, your mic is open.
Yeah, I just wanted to say a few things. I've heard about when we say we can't do so much, we're in our house. You know, people have done rallies in their cars around different places in the United States, one around a jail, I think, or something. And then if you can go to YouTube and go to Useful Idiots, it's with Matt Taibbi and Katie Helper. Their last conversation was with a man called Johan Harry, H-A-R-I. And his thing was on quarantine anxiety and depression and how to deal with it. It was one of the best interviews I think I ever heard. And he gives solutions and he tells stories. And so if you're down in the dumps, you might want to go watch it. It could help you perk up a little bit, I think so. Anyway, it's a YouTube show called Useful Idiots with Matt Taibbi and Katie Helper. It's at Rolling Stone, because I think that's where Matt works. But it's with Johan Harry, H-A-R-I. Okay? That's it.
Hey, thanks, Laura. Certainly comedy gets us through so many things and kind of helps us keep perspective. Darian, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Thank you. Getting off of mute. I had a question that I'm sure doesn't have an easy answer. I was wondering about the general attitude among people, at least in the United States. It's either a disregard for the earth, where they're actively sort of in opposition to it and use metaphors like rape and warfare when referring to extracting resources. Even extraction is a strong word, or people are indifferent, totally disconnected perhaps from the earth. It sounds like WECAN is very much connected, and I wonder if you have ideas on what it is either that has led us to this point in the U.S., or better yet, what we might do to help people get reconnected.
Wow. Well, that's the question of the hour, isn't it? I mean, great question and very important point. I'm going to give a short answer to something that really would take weeks to really unpack, I think, because, you know, how our culture has disconnected from nature is, you know, a very deep, long historical phenomena. You know, and I'm actually deep under research on that very question. I wrote a book called Uprisings for the Earth, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. So just to share with you, you know, that I deeply value the question, and it's something that, you know, I feel is essential, and spent a book writing about it, Reconnecting Culture with Nature. The book's called Uprisings for the Earth. And there's a cultural, deep historical problem with our disconnect from nature that, you know, stemmed long ago. And, you know, some of it has to do with, you know, the Industrial Revolution. Some of it has to do with worldview and our concepts. Some of it has to do with patriarchal religions. Some of it has to do with capitalism. So there's many, many, many trails that have led to this moment, which we can't have the time here to go into. But I think that, you know, without one, I think it is important to have a historical understanding, because without a historical understanding, like if you don't know where you've been, it's hard to know where you're going. So I think there's some healing and education that needs to go on concerning the historical problem that we're in and understanding this phenomena. And then, you know, moving fast forward to this moment of saying, okay, well, how do we take this crisis of both COVID-19, again, which is a reflection of our basic, you know, disrespect for nature and taking up too much habitat, and, you know, the climate crisis on top of it all, which is, again, an economic system that is totally out of balance with Mother Earth and nature. You know, how do we take this moment where, I saw this one meme that it's kind of funny, but also sad, where it basically was saying on social media, you know, I kind of feel like Mother Earth sent us to our rooms to think about what we had done. And I think there's really an element of truth in that. Like, everyone's in this place where they're in their houses, separate from each other and nature. And like, let's think about how we got here and how we've been treating nature, that she sent us to our rooms, so to speak. And, I do think that one of the most healing things to do is, you know, in addition to sort of having an analysis and understanding, is, you know, break the cycle. And I think that's where, you know, gardening is really important, getting our hands in the soil, reconnecting with the natural world. You know, it's been a while, but I used to, you know, lead wilderness courses and take people out into nature for 2 weeks. You know, when I started taking more time in urban areas, taking people on hikes to see where their watershed is, to actually go up into the mountain, see where the origin of the water is in your municipal area. I think community gardens are a really good thing. So sort of like from the bigger worldview, big picture, to just immediately, like, how do we get our kids out in nature? I love programs at school where they, you know, have gardens and they get kids out in nature growing their own food for their cafeterias, as an example. So this whole dialogue of, like, how do we reconnect with nature is absolutely essential. And, you know, there's a gazillion ways to do that, from, you know, learning about, you know, bird watching outside your front door, even if you're in your city, you know, there's birds going by. And there was this one stat, I haven't looked at it in a while, but it was something to the effect of the fact that, you know, people can name literally hundreds and hundreds of brand logos. Like, if you just show them not the name, but just the logo, they can tell you what that logo is, like the Nike logo, or, you know, even if you don't put Coca-Cola words, just that basic symbol. Like, if you look at all these logos, people can identify them, hundreds of them. But if you ask them to step outside the front door of the home that they live in, and you ask them to just identify 5 or 10 plants, the name of the tree outside their front yard, or a wildflower in their yard, or a bird that goes by, they cannot name it. They cannot say what that species is. So I think that's a reflection of some of what we could do is, you know, what, you know, if you see a bird outside your house, look it up, research it. What is that bird? What's that bird's name? What's that bird do? What does it eat? You know, what's its migration pattern? You know, there's quote unquote bushes outside our homes. What are those bushes? Or, like, a lot of people see dandelions flowers in their yard and go, oh, that's a weed, when actually It's actually a medicinal plant you can use. So without going on, I think you get the point. There's sort of the sense of like, we need to, one, look at the worldview of how we've disconnected from nature and how our culture has, you know, been embedded in this disconnect for quite some time for a gamut of deep reasons. But then also there's this immediate fact of like, well, let's get on with the business, so to speak, of reconnecting. And it can start immediately through gardening, immediately through learning just the plants and animals right outside our front door, even in the city, and beginning to get our bodies connected to this land. Like, how do we identify and start embodying being part of nature? And the last thing I'll say is everywhere, no matter where you live, there are indigenous peoples. They're still here. They might be under great duress. Or, you know, in cities, they have become urban native people. But there's indigenous peoples everywhere. Learn who they are. They still have a deep connection to the land and knowledge to share. And I think it's really important to understand that no matter who we are on stolen land. We are land as settlers. And how can we also help uncover that and help bring some justice to indigenous people and also learn from how they view nature and have lived here in the United States, or as they call it, Turtle Island, for a very long time in harmony with the natural world, and what can we learn from that?
Great, thank you. For Earth Day this year, my commitment to me is that I'm going to read a book I've been trying to get to for a while called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer, a native indigenous woman who is a just breathtaking writer, and I've been wanting to read her work for a while. Maybe right now the best we can do is read and try to expose ourselves in this way to nature and teach children about the names of plants and birds and Laura Dewey, your hand is up.
Hi. Actually, Joan kind of touched on my question, which was about the elections, but I wanted to focus on young people. And that letter that those young groups, those people leading young groups wrote to, what's his name, Biden, it's on Common Dreams, and I urge everyone to read it. It's powerful, and their demands are sophisticated. That's what struck me about it. So I like the idea that they want to pressure Biden to take on more, you know, radical demands, which frankly are not radical. But it's sort of what Bernie is doing by allowing his name to be remain on. He's not pulling out of the elections, out of the primaries, because he wants to gain as many delegates as possible to influence the platform of the party, you know, the Democratic Party. So, but Mike, so anyway, read that article that Osprey mentioned. It's excellent. So, Osprey, my question for you was, do you work a lot with young people? And if so, do you get a sense of whether they will vote this November? And will you urge them to vote, even if it's Biden? Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we do. And, it's very, very tough. Like I said, I think that right now we need to also let young people lead. And their leadership now is in the direction of the letter that you mentioned that is, yes, published on Common Dreams. And I think that there'll be a moment. I think in this moment, this week, we have to follow their lead, which is these demands that they've put on the Biden campaign, and let them pace when we step into the conversation. Let them mourn the loss of you know, the hopes for Bernie Sanders becoming president. Let them have some space around that. Really uplift these demands that they've put forward. Really acknowledge that, and just let them dictate the pace. And look for that opening, you know, to begin those conversations about, you know, what this means. And because I know if we move too quickly, it's not a good idea. Because it's you know, for all the reasons that we know, people have to be ready. And also, like I said, I think one of the things that we can do in terms of supporting the youth is to get behind their demands and to help push those demands and do everything we can to pressure the Biden campaign and, you know, their analysis on many things and their policies, because that's what's going to make a difference and get the youth to get excited, is if they actually see that everyone is pressuring Biden to get more progressive and he actually comes out with some more statements and policies that are in alignment with their values and our values. That, I think, is going to make a lot more difference than sort of just jumping to, hey, young people, you know, we just can't have Trump anymore. And, you know, we're really sorry about Bernie, but, like, you guys got to vote anyway. You just have to vote for Biden anyway because, you know, Trump is so horrible and we've got to, it's going to make a big difference and we just can't go through this anymore. I don't think that stance will work right now. We're not there yet. I think we have to go through a process, and they're outlining that process.
Okay, we have one more question from Mary BJ in Tennessee. Go ahead, Mary.
Well, hello, and it's been such a privilege to hear all that you've said, and also for the quality of questions and comments, Osprey. I love the blading of your personal and political selves. I just want to say, and I think you hinted at this, we have been here before in this country almost 200 years ago. There was a time when we appropriated human lives, people that we stole from Africa and brought to this land, and we named them private property. And an upstart president was pushed, did not begin there. He was pushed to say, we will make the largest appropriation of private property in the public interest in the history of the world, when he declared that we would no longer enslave human beings. There is an analogy for that that we must consider today. When you said that nature is being used as private property, that is very reminiscent of that period of history. And although this might sound like an impossible dream, it is not a dream. It is a goal. It is a purpose. It's the kind of purpose that people spend 100 years searching and fighting for. As you said, we have to fight for this. Nature has rights, as you said, and we have to assert those rights. They're analogous to the enslaved human beings of the 18th and 19th century, and we can set them free. The question is no longer a question of capitalism. Capitalism in itself, as the relationship between labor and capital, no longer exists. It's already gone. The issue now is private property, which is being appropriated and exploited, and we can end that. And I didn't mean to make a speech about this. I really just wanted to say that I picked up on those things in your presentation, Osprey. I very much appreciate them, and I don't want us to move hard. We may not be here to see the end of this struggle, but we have to make those first steps now, or the 10th steps, or the 100th steps, or however many we're making. Thank you so much for your presentation. And if there's time at the end, I would like to make a very brief announcement, because I have a very important announcement about what one of our Wilk sisters is doing. Thank you.
Mary, your video is being queued up as we speak.
It would be wonderful to see the video at the end, but this is what I want to say. The largest march of poor peoples since the 1960s was planned for June 20th by the Poor People's Campaign, the New Poor People's Campaign. It was to be a moral march on Washington on June 2020. Because of the period that we're in right now and the threat to human life and this planet, march is going digital. And to do that as a partner organization, Wilf needed to have some more energy than I alone could give it. I put out the word for someone please to step forward to be our communications and social media partner. And Jan Quarterman stepped forth and said that she would do this. I will continue as the liaison between Wilf and the Poor People's Campaign. But Jan Quarterman, as my partner and as the partner of the Poor People's Campaign, will be handling social media and communications, and she has already done something very important, which is to get that message from Reverend Barber and Reverend Liz up on our website. It's on the left-hand side. It is a personal message from them to us, and people can go to our website and view that message. It's about 90 seconds long.
First, we're going to officially thank Osprey, Mary. We'll be queuing up your video in just a little while, and then Jan can speak. Osprey, we're winding down. Thank you so much for being with us tonight and giving us the gift of your insight. I think Mary BJ said it better than any of us could. These are really unprecedented times, but your presentation offers hope and inspiration that we need as we keep moving forward. Please feel free to listen in to the rest of our call, or you're welcome to be off. We so appreciate the gift of your time, and we'll just, we have Mary BJ next.
Thank you all for all of your dedication and work and inviting me onto your call this evening, and everyone take good care and good health to everyone, and remember that we're all in this together, and we're not giving up, and, you know, best wishes to all of you, and thanks so much for having me. Bye-bye.
Oh, thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much.